Savitri is like music, the flute of Krishna, rhythms of delight. The life divine is the word of God, rhythms of light. So both have their beautiful, mutually complementing effect. Of course, there are no comparisons. But still, one is Nad Brahman, the other is Shabd Brahman. And both take us through luminous vastnesses towards the divine. Often people ask, when they look at things going around, that what is the hope? What is the hope? There's only one hope. And the only hope, one hope worth always remembering, that the divine has entered into this creation. And if the divine is there in creation, in us, in every particle, its destiny is to become divine. There is no doubt about that. Even for a moment, this doubt shouldn't come. Whether it will be one cycle or another cycle, this life, another life, all this is a question of play of time. But one thing that Sri Aurobindo and very logically assures us, that there is a luminous future. This luminous future, through a succession of dawns, or through a dawn that continues into eternal day, or through coming of night and dawns, that's different. And to an extent, perhaps, there we have some little role to play. But the future of the earth is secure by the very nature of things, because supermind is hidden in everything. And its praman, its proof is everywhere. Its proof is that the seed develops into a tree of whose seed it is. Its proof is that the atom and molecules and space and galaxies, everything remains in a certain kind of order. The proof is that evolution is there out of dust to man. So the proof is everywhere if you want to see it. Because it implies that there is some power which is determining things from within, behind. Because if you look at the surface, we don't see that power. But there is some power which is hidden, which is not just random power, which is not mechanical power, but which is acts like a intelligence. It is knowledge and power which by its silent will is pushing things in a certain direction. And that power is the supermind, which is hidden in the every atom of creation. Because it is the determining power of the one, Satchidanand. So, it is this discovery which gives hope for the future. Without it, if one comes in contact with Satchidanand, or by a flight enters into the impersonal Brahman, obviously the missing link, the clue is not there. So there is only a contrast between life as it is and the one divine perfection which is beyond. It also means, most importantly, very practically at a grounded level, for all of us there is hope. Not only for us, for everybody, even those who are apparently wrestling, even those who are so-called opposing us and opposing the plan of God, everybody, because this is a tremendous flow. This force is incalculable, it's pushing from behind and now also from above. That's how when Mother was asked in 71, how do you see Sri Aurobindo's now? So she says, oh, his power has become so much, it's acting with so much more pressure on creation to become divine. Because in the body there is a limitation of action. It's like a golden flux, influx pressing upon matter, pushing it to turn toward the divine. It is also showing us our limitations. All mental calculations, all of them fail, which is what we see people experiencing. But still they hold on to some sacred scriptures. We love to replace scriptures, we love to replace, but we put them with the same function. So we do away with the old gods, put the new one in place. But there is the Supreme Divine who is there in every particle of creation. So yesterday we read about this journey of life, its ascension from atom to man. And we see life in three layers. One is atom. There is life there as divine energy. But this energy is as if totally involved inside the atom. So it seems there is no consciousness. Energy, of course, one cannot deny, but it seems there is no consciousness. Force, one cannot deny, but there is just the force. So it seems mechanical, and yet if we look at how the atom is organized and the atomic life is organized, where there are certain laws, not the quantum world, but as we go up and up, we see certain laws that are organizing matter. And then this, so there is consciousness, but force is prominent. Then we see the next layer, which is life in the animal and the plant, or plant and the animal. And there we observe struggle for existence, and because life has to affirm the individual. So life has to affirm itself in the individual, because individualities have been created. And that can only happen when along with force there is also something like consciousness which is released. So at least in higher animals we begin to see some sense of that individual, not individuality as we understand, but there is an instinct of preservation of individual life. At the same time, there is a clash with all life, because every individual life is trying to preserve itself. So life assumes a theater or stage of struggle, struggle for existence, struggle for survival, struggle for affirmation. Then at the third stage, we see that man emerges, and with the emergence of man, there is another pursuit that life begins to pursue, pursuit of perfection. It's not satisfied just the way it is. And the struggle of existence, of clash and strife, begins to be replaced by cooperation. So we also see here the ascension of desire, the journey of love. All this we see, how life begins to release powers, consciousness begins to grow, so man becomes a self-conscious individual. So consciousness is now released, it begins to take more and more prominence. So it started with force. Force is always there, but this force begins to become more and more as if there is a conscious control, conscious mastery. And that's why the more evolved person, the sign of a more evolved person is that there is a certain degree of conscious mastery over life. So that's what we see the journey of life is. And we had stopped at a very beautiful point where Sri Aurobindo says, where will this journey lead us? It leads us to love. So from one point when we see that love is the origin. It's laboring in creation. That's why atoms, molecules come together, galaxies come together, and there is harmony despite everything. And slowly that love again is recovered or rediscovered at the apex. And love means to bring together, to harmonize apparent contradictory things. And it has already been done actually. Those who doubt in supramental evolution, a much more challenging time was when life emerged from matter. Very challenging, because how can matter begin to expand, reproduce? If somebody ever asked God, what's your plan? And he said, when you know this rock, yeah, that's what I am seeing for millions, billions of years. Oh, you see, this rock is going to crawl and fly, and it's impossible. And see the rock. It is the same rock. Minerals, plants draw from the minerals. It will reproduce. So by the way, there is one variety of rock which reproduces also. So nature has done all kinds of experiments, and that's how it develops. So now we see already there is a impossible task already done. And out of plant a thinking creature. And therefore supermind is inevitable. So now we read... But mind is also not the last summit. So we read on page 215. Only a mental being, fifth, sixth line from above, only a mental being supported by the psychic nodus within which expresses or begins to express the secret soul. Now Sri Aurobindo is bringing this new factor. After the mentalized man, what next? What next is the emergence of the secret psychic entity. So how it will act? It will start acting through the mind. So development of the mind is important. It has its own place. So it will act from behind upon the mind. And what will happen then? Supported by the psychic nodus within, which expresses or begins to express the secret soul, can hope to persist by his power of linking on the past to the future in a stream of continuity, which the breaking of the form may break in the physical memory, but need not destroy in the mental being itself, and which may even by an eventual development bridge over the gap of physical memory created by death and birth of the body. So what does life want? It wants continuity, it wants permanence. But in physical body, it's not possible as of now. That's what Sri Aurobindo qualifies as of now. One day it will be. So nature has devised this way, taking help of the secret soul, the divine portion within, and the stock, the mind, pressing upon the mind, linking together. It forms, it remembers the stream which flows through time. And the secret soul also contains our own blueprint of the future. So if one enters and comes in contact with, best identifies with the soul within, then the past and the future begins to reveal itself, not as Trikal Drishti, which is different, but individually glimpses of the past, glimpses of the future. So it begins to reveal itself. That's the beauty. So there is a kind of permanence. Naturally, such a being will not try to somehow physically preserve the form any which way and assert itself, because you have discovered the basis of permanence. And he says, one day, if the physical can also be joined, right now it takes up the mind, the secret soul presses upon the mind, and those memories which have been touched by the mind, which has been touched by the secret soul, those memories can be carried over. But it's possible that one day even physical memories can be carried over. So what is meant by physical memories is, right, whatever work had been done in the very body, those experiences, like one of those where the mother remembered her, the burning of Joan of Arc at stake, or it is reported that Sri Aurobindo would sometimes, you know, pass his hand on the neck. This Amrita Das reporting, and Amrita Das asked him that, what is it? Is there some problem? He says, no, he remembered the guillotine experience during the French Revolution. So that's what is meant by physical memory. Not like I was here or there. Those scenes can come up through the subtle physical. But even the physical, concrete physical experiences. Right now we do not normally carry these physical experiences. Or even if we carry, we are not conscious of it. Like some people do become conscious, you know, that I have been here very, very physically. So all these memories can also continue. Even as it is, even in the present imperfect development of embodied mind, the mental being is conscious in the mass of a past and a future extending beyond the life of the body. He becomes aware of an individual past, of individual lives. So this, of course, through only at times, it's not a common phenomena, but this physical memory is very interesting. So there have been case studies of transplant patients. And one of the studies which was very remarkable was that somebody who was transplanted, the eye was transplanted onto another patient. So this patient, who received the eye transplant from a dead person, suddenly started seeing things which he would get flashes of someone with a dagger, flashes of someone killing, and he wouldn't understand what's happening. Actually, it was this man who had died, whose eyes had been transplanted, the cornea. So he had actually died, he was killed. And that memory was so intense, absorbed in the very body. This is a very authentically documented case. It's not a WhatsApp thing. There have been others, almost 21 such documented cases of transplantation where the memory of one has gone into another, physical memory. This is a most well-known documented case. That's why I'm mentioning, where people have tried in various ways to see whether it's true or not, but it is true. This whole thing opened the whole murder sequence. So it was because his eyes had absorbed those memories in the very body, and when they were transplanted, it continued to relive those experiences. So that's how we will evolve. But now we come to the most important thing, the last para on page 215. Association with love as its secret principle and its emergence summit is the type. Emergent summit is the type. The power of this new relation and therefore the governing principle of the development into the third status of life. So there is the life of, there is a humanity which is largely leading a life which is a subconscient life. Mechanically bound to routine, rigidly bound to tradition, custom and whatever. That's the physical life of man. Shubhendu actually describes these three kinds of life. So there is that life which is totally bound to custom, tradition, physical environment, and that's it. Very mechanical in all its habits. Then there is the vital life, where desires come in and desires expand and take further. And then there is the mentalized life, where you think whether you should do this or not do this, and all these things come. And then naturally the need to associate through thought, through ideas, and not just because physically you are born in an environment. So this is how there are three layers of humanity, and now he's speaking of a fourth layer where the secret psychic principle begins to press. And then we have the birth of conscious love, though it takes the form as if it's in the mind or the higher vital, but basically it's because the psychic has begun to develop and press itself. The conscious preservation of individuality along with the consciously accepted necessity and desire of interchange, self-giving and fusion with other individuals is necessary for the working of the principle of love. For if either is abolished, the working of love ceases, whatever may take its place. Meaning thereby, if individuality is there, again the challenge is, people often ask, how much to give in love? Because you may be eaten up. Now this is one part, but Sri Aurobindo will take us to the next level. So here a kind of interchange is found. Relationships last in a very pragmatic human sense, not in the higher, because divine love only gives and gives. But in the pragmatic world, relationships last only when there is a give and take, an interchange. And I don't understand this. The give and take may be at any level, it may be at different levels, but without that give and take, if somebody is always wanting and taking and not giving, so by force of circumstances, even if you compel it, it doesn't work out. There has to be give and take, and nature teaches us in ordinary life in its own ways. Fulfillment of love by entire self-immolation. Now comes that level which we don't normally experience. Fulfillment of love by entire self-immolation. So it's not said here that love ceases, because two have become one. If one has completely annulled oneself, then love ceases. Why? Because they become one. Something else takes its place, that is oneness. But fulfillment of love by entire self-immolation, even with an illusion of self-annihilation, is indeed an idea and an impulse in the mental being. But it points to a development beyond this third summit status of life. There have been instances like that. Very rare. Somebody asked a question that, you know, how can love subsist without some kind of giving or expression, or, you know, nowadays we have so many means of expression. So, well, look at Radha Krishna's love. No mobiles, nothing. They didn't live together. But look at their love. The story is so amazing. And right up to the end, after, when Radha only asks for one thing, when she is leaving her body, she asks only one thing of Krishna. Just play the flute that you played when I was a child, when we were children. So Krishna plays the flute as never ever he had played. That's how the story goes. And then Radha just melts into him. And after that, Shri Krishna breaks the flute that he will never play it again. Now, these are amazing stories of self-giving completely for the great purpose. And there have been instances of this. Normally women can do it, and that's why we see also in life of Sita. We may revolt, we may feel bad in something, but Sita gave herself so completely that even when she is abandoned, she doesn't raise an army or say, oh, you did this to me. Never a word she breathes of anger or hatred or any such reprimand to Rama. Because she knows that the Rama lives for the nation. For him, the Rajya is higher than anyone else or anything else. She understands it. And hence she knows that what Rama is doing is hurting me probably, but his action is required to set the highest standards for that age among the animal kind of humanity. And so she never, that's a giving of another dimension altogether. So there have been possibilities, but this is rare. So he says it goes beyond the third status. This third status is a condition in which we rise progressively beyond the struggle for life by mutual devouring and the survival of the fittest by that struggle. For there is more and more a survival by mutual help and a self-perfectioning by mutual adaptation, interchange and fusion. And at the highest level, as we have seen, you feel happy in the survival of the person you love. That's something very amazing. It's not no more your survival. Main raho na ya na raho. That's the acme where love can reach. And that mother's experience sometimes, that story of Akbar where he asked, bring to me the mother who is, who bring to me the child who is the best child in the world. And he say, any mother you pick up, the child will be the best. And then he cannot understand. So he says that, you know, mother and child are left in the body of water and the water keeps increasing. And there comes a point where mother has to either leave the child or, you know, try something to escape, and the mother lifts the child up. This is what we see in Bahubali, part 1 or 2, I don't remember. Exact part 1. So, see, this is the instinct for mother. After all, what is it? I may not be there. And this is there in story of Cleopatra and Julius Caesar. How Cleopatra knows she must die, Julius Caesar is gone, she gives the child to two of her, you know, faithful ones. And then she tells this chit of a boy, maybe 8 years, 10 years. He says, you are a prince, you never cry. And then she goes inside and gets herself bit by that snake and dies. So this is the great sacrifice, or of the person who dies for the country. See, this is a kind of love which is not common. A soldier laying down his life happily. What an experience. There are so many others who are connected with him. Those who talk about Rama sacrifice, here is one. Where he gives his life for the country. And there are so many stories. One of them, I think, Arun Khetrapal, who 19-year-old, Vikram Batra, 30-year-old, young age. They lose their life. Why? Because of the love. It's impelled by love. It's not enmity with the enemy. It's not hatred. For the love of the nation, I must make sure that my people are protected. And therefore they give their life. So there is a height of love. And of course its highest is in the divine. But man can hardly love the divine. The divine love pouring upon earth. And the singular example is that we see is Sri Aurobindo and the mother. The only thing that I keep thinking is that how they gave. Sri Aurobindo literally gave his physical sight to give us the true sight. And we still keep the live divine in a cupboard. At least we keep it People who don't buy, how costly it is. Just imagine, they ask the cost of the life divine. He literally gave his sight to, so that the world may wake up to a new sight. So this giving, where you completely, one forgets even oneself. But before that, there is the give and take. So total giving, as they say, this should be come with a little that in small letters. It should be, this is only for experts. Don't try prematurely. You will be eaten away. You have to go through these steps. That's why otherwise one will become a martyr. That's not what is expected on the altar of ignorance. Because first we should discover the soul. And then he makes a prophecy. Shobindu is making a prophecy. And this is a tremendous prophecy. But he's making it in a very interesting way. The individuals and the aggregates who develop most the law of association and the law of love, of common help, kindliness, affection, comradeship, unity, who harmonize most successfully survival and mutual self-giving. The aggregate increasing the individual and the individual the aggregate. As well as individual increasing individual and aggregate by mutual interchange will be the fittest for survival in this tertiary status of the evolution. It's a prophecy. The other day I was referring to this and going to Auroville, man who suddenly stops. It didn't happen to me, but a group of people who were coming to Savitri Bhavani, so rude, so almost crudely, because he has been probably not been instructed properly. So he said, we have to go for the lecture. There is 10 minutes left. We are genuine people. You can ask. He said, no, you leave the car here and you walk. 80-year-old man, you walk. Walk all the way from that turning point to Savitri Bhavan. So in the talk itself I mentioned, I said this is inimical to Auroville itself, because you can't make things so closed. If you make them closed, and that's why the mother at one place speaks of the ashram extending beyond the geographical boundaries to all those who have intellectually declared themselves to be the disciples of Sri Aurobindo. Because if you treat them as separates, no, they are not, this is dangerous. Because life is conterminous, unity between individual and aggregate, they are both connected with each other. We can't cut and divide life like that. So this is an experience which, this is a training in ashram, we are supposed to learn, one of them, many things. Affection, care for each other, spirit of brotherhood. We may have differences, it's okay. Sometimes you may not like somebody because there are affinities. Mother spoke of that. Someone said that, why I don't like this person. She said because of affinities. But in yoga, you have to rise above affinities. You may not like someone. It's okay. Yet you have to learn the law of association, of love, of giving, of camaraderie, unity. And toward the later part, Mother has literally predicted when she was asked about the future. About the ashram. She says, most important is unity. Unity must be there. Because the moment there is division, all kinds of forces. Division is asura. And that unity, how we'll bring about, that's a challenge to everyone. Always forces of division, and we have to maintain this unity. Again, without threatening the individual, that becomes the catch. Because some people say, okay, for the sake of unity, we'll accept anything and everything. No, that anything and everything, if it threatens the life, that's when you have to call it stop. That's important, because you can't threaten an aggregate. An aggregate cannot be threatened by another aggregate to finish it off. So aggregates helping each other. And one classic example that, how both these forces at geopolitics, India and the Saudi kingdoms coming close, totally different religions, there is no issue coming close because both realize they can help each other. And that's why you see now the Saudi crown prince is under threat, his life is under threat, because he is trying to unify. Same thing happened when there was an effort to bring together the Arabs and the Israel, and there was all the chaos which was created. I won't name which country. The Arab Spring, all that happened. Here we see the same thing, seeds of discord being sown. And we should be very careful. It's aggregate to aggregate. They have to learn to mutually help and cooperate. And if one cannot do it, that's why Shubhendu speaks even about the Akhandata of Bharat from a higher standpoint. That if you don't do it, always there will be this maimed, fractured thing. And it may even jeopardize India's destiny, even thwart it. And he says, even invite an alien occupation, which Mother speaks of in the agenda much later. So unity, association, love, care, affection, camaraderie. We see some of the people who succeed, even the Asuric types. They succeed because they have this. Strangely, comradeship. And they have the sense of unity. Of course, our challenge is much, much greater. So we'll see now the attempt to divide Indian society along lines of caste, along lines of high and low. So we have to be very careful not to succumb to this. Because, I'll read this again, very powerful, the individuals and the aggregates who develop most the law of association and the law of love. And what is the law of association? Growing mutually. It's not abrogation of individual or one aggregate by another. We should be very careful about this little change. It's not about one individual completely being run over by another, or one aggregate being completely like the Muslim invasion, or no, not that way. But together, of law of love, of common help, kindliness, affection, comradeship, unity, who harmonize most successfully survival and mutual self-giving. Because survival of the individual and the group is also important, as well as giving and growing. As well as the individual, increasing individual, and aggregate by mutual interchange will be the fittest for survival in this tertiary status of the evolution. Verdict has gone. It's a question of whether we put it into practice or refuse to put it into practice. And we can start with our little life here, beautiful life. And the best way to unite in our life is be centered around the mother. We may have differences of views, opinions, but we have one mother, the universal mother, the divine mother. And at a larger level also, when Shrivindra spoke about the Hindu-Muslim problem, he gave us a way to unify. He said very clearly that, well, we may have differences of religion and differences of all this. Can we deny our one mother, Mother India? So this bhava that she is a living mother, and despite some politicians saying no or resisting, we should not listen. Bande Mataram should be the way of life here. Just this thought, Bande Mataram, we bow to the mother, Mother India, that brings that sense when we greet each other with Bande Mataram. So there are so many ways, common action. So all these are ways that he has hinted at us to join together. This development is significant of the increasing predominance of mind. So meaning thereby the education should also focus on the growth of intelligence, the mind, true intelligence. So this madrasa system won't do, because if you keep people unintelligent, they will be very prone to all kinds of forces which can occupy the mind. So the development of intelligence, and that has nothing to do with computer. Computer is a mechanical thing. But certain things which should be part of a culture, and we should be ready to share it. Indonesia is a predominantly Muslim nation, I think 95%. But they take pride that our culture is a Hindu culture. And these things, Ramayana is played there openly. So we should, but we are so afraid, or afraid of the vote bank. So we should try to bring that there is, we have a common culture. And that's what should, it requires nothing but courage, nothing else. Not calculation, but courage. And one man of courage will change everything. So, for mind by its greater subtlety does not need to devour in order to assimilate, possess and grow. Rather, the more it gives, the more it receives and grows. And the more it fuses itself into others, the more it fuses others into itself and increases the scope of its being. That's what is meant. When you share wisdom, it increases. So to receive knowledge, to give knowledge, to share, it can, mind can fuse at that level, and it can even enrich each other. That's the beauty of the mind. Physical life exhausts itself by too much giving and ruins itself by too much devouring. What a wonderful. You eat too much, there is a problem. And if you keep fast or just, you know, keep on working out, but don't, then you are ruined. So you have to avoid both extremes. Physical life. But though mind in proportion as it leans on the law of matter suffers the same limitation, yet on the other hand, in proportion as it grows into its own law, it tends to overcome this limitation. And in proportion as it overcomes the material limitation, giving and receiving becomes one. For in its upward ascent, it grows toward the rule of conscious unity in differentiation, which is the divine law of the manifest Satchidananda. And we see this mind can, in its initial phases, is subject to the body. This Shubhendu explains beautifully in the Synthesis of Yoga. Meaning thereby, if I am unwell, physically unwell, then what can I do? My mind cannot, I cannot take a class, I cannot, you know, do any intellectual activity. Your thought is connected with the body. But mind as it develops can free itself completely from the body. And even if there is a physical illness, mind can continue with its activity independently. Even physical activity, because now mind has become the leader. And when does it become leader? Because it understands that, you know, my survival is okay, but there is, everybody else is something of myself. And the classic example of Queen Elizabeth, which I am sure was the mother in one of her lives, Elizabeth I. So all the people come around, see, she had suffered exactly, we should take the lesson. So the coterie around her were not letting her meet the commoner. So she never knew what's going on, the problem that is going on. So there was one day an agitation and all these people came, you know, for bread, they want bread. And all the ministers saying, no, nothing. She's saying, but they are, you know, they have come at my door, I must talk to them. No, 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 there is nothing, you are so unwell. She was on deathbed. So finally they don't want her to meet. So they say, but you know, you are on deathbed. This is a story quoted by the mother. So she gets up and says, but death can wait. I must meet my people. See, this comes, death can wait. Now this is only possible when mind has developed beyond the subjection to body. So initially mind is subject to the body and therefore it gets exhausted, strained if the body is unwell. It depends upon the body. But if it frees itself from the body, not only can it be independent, it can impose a greater law even on the body. So that even the body recovers, because now mind is beginning to draw from its own realm, purer energy. So this is what we have to learn. And then the second term he says, but in the third term, 217, fourth line from above, the growth into the third status of life by the principle of association, the growth of love, does not abolish the law of desire, but rather transforms and fulfills it. See, desire as we experience is never fulfilling. We want. And mother says this very beautifully. She says, rungs of love. So first step is you love only yourself. What yourself? Your little self. Second step is you give love in return for love. If somebody loves you, you make a concession, little bit love, okay, because So much love. And why you give? Because you want to receive that love. That's what makes it work. You don't want to stop it. So time to time you keep giving. So you give love in return. Then comes the third state, where you give love, not because you are receiving love, but you want acknowledgement. Yaar, thank you to bol do. At least in some way acknowledge. But this is also ego. So the fourth step is where you love without any need of return, because love has become your breath. You can't help it. So these are the rungs of love. That's what he is revealing to us in his own andaz, in his own way. Love is in its nature the desire to give oneself to others. Period. Define love. All other definitions apart. Shivinda has said this definition in several different ways in different places. Of course, Savitri and everywhere. So anybody wants to know what love is. So here is love. Love is in its nature the desire to give oneself to others and to receive others in exchange. That's the second part. It is a commerce between being and being. Physical life does not desire to give itself. It desires only to receive. So that shows the degree of development of an individual. It wants, it wants, it wants. That is hunger, that is death. And even if you give all life, if you feed free, if you do everything, at the end, human beings with a physical consciousness, I'm not saying those who are not educated or literate, no. But those whose soul is in a very nascent stage, who are stuck with the physical. That's how physical consciousness is, who are, life is centered around food, sex, a little progeny. That's what is physical consciousness. So it needs only giving. It desires only to receive. It is true that it is compelled to give itself, for the life which only receives and does not give must become barren, wither and perish. Second thing about love. If we only keep on receiving, we'll wilt. Because the channel will become smaller and narrower. So you have to give. So people often say, how to become receptive to the divine? By giving yourself to the divine. Simple. The more one gives, the more one receives. If one only wants to receive, then one cannot receive beyond a point, because the channel is very small. So once, of course, it's not a good way, but somebody was telling me that how much one receives from mother and what this change took place, this change took place. And he said, but I am, again and again I go into depression at the end. So I said something I shouldn't have said, but anyway. I said, what have you given to the mother? You keep saying that I have been receiving, she has her grace, but again, what have you given? So he was, what should I give? That's not for me to decide. That's for you to think. Have you ever felt that I should also give to the mother? You are taken. Mother does not want or expect you to give, but your channel will become blocked. Beyond a point, it won't happen because you have remained narrow. See, a vessel, if you keep on pouring beyond a point, it is full. You can't have more. Even if the pouring continues, it will keep spilling. And when the vessel keeps on emptying into some container, let's say it has a tap, it gives to all what it receives, then it will keep on receiving. And that's what he is going to reveal to us. So ordinarily, because love is behind this creation, you are compelled to give. But that's a different thing altogether. It obeys the subconscious impulse of nature rather than consciously shares in it. Even when love intervenes, the self-giving at first still preserves to a large extent the mechanical character of the subconscious will in the atom. Love itself at first obeys the law of hunger and enjoys the receiving and the exacting from others rather than the giving and surrendering to others, which it admits chiefly as a necessary price for the thing that it desires. So stop idolizing Karna. Duryodhan gave him what he was always wanting, desiring. A throne and respect. Why he gave him? Absolutely calculating fellow. And all his life he said, no, I must give. Why he should give? Because if he gives, he will continue to receive, because he is a favorite of the king now. So one should understand that, you know, we idolize all this. Okay. Even Pandav brothers were born in the jungle. There, so what? So this is where we have to understand that had he really loved Dharma, had he really loved even his own kin, that's how Sri Krishna reveals to him, he would have said, no, I should not be with this cohort. He did not. And so it is because of him that the war took place. One of the fellows, part of the... So it's a hunger initially. But here it has not yet attained to its true nature. Its true law is to establish an equal commerce in which the joy of giving, look at here, joy, not calculated giving, joy of giving is equal to the joy of receiving and tends in the end to become even greater. See, this is the beauty. Imagine if somebody is giving out of, you know, compulsion and somebody is giving with a joy spontaneous. Isn't there a difference? The receiver knows the difference, that this is not given with a calculation that I am going to get something or I am getting something. But that is when it is shooting beyond itself under the pressure of the psychic flame to attain to the fulfillment of utter unity and has therefore to realize that which seemed to it not self as an even greater and dearer self than its own individuality. Just imagine. So it begins to realize, so how can such a being seek escape from earthly life that meri mukti ho gayi? Because you don't have love. That's why when somebody asked the mother, see, about freedom, independence, all this, she quoted a famous mystic, Sufi mystic. My gut feeling it was Inayat Khan. She had met him in Paris. He was a mystic and he had come here all the way and played music for Sri Aurobindo. And says, I met a mystic who once told me something very interesting. He said when someone came and asked him, I want to be independent. And so he said, independent? You want to be independent, then you won't have love. And then the mother says, it is so very true. But she continues, she explains. She says, the only true freedom is the freedom of the Lord. And the fastest way to arrive at that freedom is love. So she says, if you want to be truly free and really independent in the real sense of the word, then you have to learn love. And if you have not trained in love, you cannot arrive fast with that. And that's why Savitri says, love is the why. I know that knowledge is a vast embrace. So, and then he says, on the next page, last page, there comes about through association and through love a recognition of the not self as a greater self and therefore a consciously accepted submission to its law and need which fulfills the increasing impulse of aggregate life to absorb the individual. That the person is a greater self. See, there is a beautiful passage in Savitri. So ordinarily, it's believed in Indian thought that, well, I must follow my husband's steps. So that's how it was, you know, the sati pratha. I'm not going into, it's much later, there's one odd instance and how it was blown up. Not going into that. But behind it, the principle was that we don't part. Not only unto death, but beyond death. So we go together. It was not called as burning, it was Agni Snan, a consciously entering into fire. So this was a height of what people could, you know, achieve in their love. It got degraded like caste system and many others, we'll not go into it. But in Savitri, there is a passage where Savitri is contemplating, what if Satyavan goes away? And I am not able to stop the death. So she says, I can walk with him in his footsteps. And then she says, but that will not be right. Now imagine why she is saying not right. Oh, my life, I should lead my own way. Why should I give up? She says, those parents will need me. Just imagine. Those parents will need me, whom he loved and who loved him. How can I just abandon them and walk away? I will be happy walking with him beyond. I mean, it's an amazing passage. You have tears in the eyes when you see she is contemplating and saying, I'll be happy to walk with him hand in hand into the other worlds. But I'll choose a more difficult fate. And that fate is that, let me be separated from him. That is painful. But to abandon these parents whom he loved and whom, and you know, who was loved by them. What a wonderful thing. We see this in Ramayana, where story, when, you know, when Mandodari is very angry and she wants to give a shrap. And Hanuman knows, so he takes the form of Trijata and goes there. And while she's about to give a curse and says, you know, this has happened, that has happened. And she's rising up and he says, wait. Actually, you know, it's not Rama. It's Hanuman. See, he's the person who led him here. He's the person who built the bridge. He's the person who destroyed Lanka. He's the person who actually went right up to Indrajit and killed him. So you see, actually, the real culprit is Hanuman. Hanuman has changed his form and is saying all this. So she gives a shrap. And she says that, yes, I curse Hanuman that he will be always separated from his Lord. And then Trijata walks in and says, who are you? Then he comes back to his original form. He says, you should have cursed that I die. I took all that brunt anger upon myself out of my love for him. But this curse is worse than death. See, there are such high points in Indian thought which people don't understand. They want to reduce it, trivialize it. And these are Shobindo's words when she says, but my parents, they will still need me. This was the spirit. And so this is the recognition of self in the not self. And finally, he gives us the solution to the problem, page 218. Therefore, the perfect solution of the problem of life is not likely to be realized by association, interchange, and accommodation of love alone, or through the law of the mind and the heart alone. It must come by a fourth status of life in which the eternal unity of the many is realized through the spirit and conscious foundation of all the operations of life is laid no longer in the divisions of body, nor in the passions and hungers of the vitality, nor in the groupings and the imperfect harmonies of the mind, not in a combination of all these, but in the unity and freedom of the spirit. So why this interchange, association, which is very high up the ladder, third status? Because you are still having a separation between this body and that body. And how beautifully Mother, in one of the places when, you know, the transformation yoga is going on, she says, how does it matter whether it is this body, pointing to her body, or any other body that can realize it? Just imagine. She has, for decades she has worked. And then she says, I agree, this body is more prepared. But she is only concerned about the realization of the work. So that's why sometimes you say, oh, I had this experience. Oh, I want this experience. This want is the law of desire. All yoga, sadhana, under the pressure of the psychic, is all about giving oneself. And what happens to one body, this body, or any this thing, is the Lord's lookout. That's how the mother puts it. Our work is to give ourselves, and what the Lord does with it is his work, his job description. We should not try to enter into it. To give oneself completely is the highest possibility for man. So that's what last few lines from Savitri, page 632, those who want to read it fully. So Savitri describes to love, to death, that a mystic slow transfiguration work, and all our earth climbs to the sky, and love that was once animal's want, hunger, then a sweet madness in the rapturous heart, then a happy comradeship in the mind, you want to share thoughts and exchange, becomes a vast spiritual yearning space, the lonely soul passions for the alone. And then he says that after that, the lover opens the door, leans out, and then all is God. Everybody, you include, because all is God. And he says, when that happens, she predicts that when that happens, death will cease to be. Because law of death can only reach up to the point of hunger. When love comes in, it begins to loosen its grip. Why? Because you no more say it's about my death. You are anyways continuing. So death, it becomes difficult for death to handle love. But even there, it can still enter. But the moment we begin to experience the unity of the spirit, then death cannot reach. So that's what we see, the truth given in Savitri, the victory of love over death. And that's why Savitri says, but first human love must change its ways into ways divine. That we'll speak of later. We'll stop here and come back after 10 minutes.